Radio. Right now, it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz. It is time for the Food Maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning, and this morning is no different. Good morning, Arthur.
Every Monday morning.
Yeah, just about.
Yes, no. I look forward to this half hour. So, for the first time, because I hate listening to myself, but I have a new phone. So I needed to play with it last night. I listened to our podcast.
Yes.
Well, I listened to half of one podcast. But the point is, I discovered, because I haven't even looked at the site in a long time, that you actually title each one by the subjects I intend to talk about, because you know ahead of time what I'm going to talk about or supposed to talk about, and I don't get to everything.
No, well,
that's for instance, last week or maybe I think it was just last week, I intended to talk about what I call the beach with a B, crostata. It is in fact originally the peach crostata. However, I renamed it just in my brain because, I think it must be close to 40 years ago. I shared a house on Fire Island with a bunch of friends. And August, when we were all off on vacation and all in the house for 2 weeks, I made this crostata, and it was so popular, and we were so many guys, that I had to make it over and over again. And so it became known as the beach crostata instead of the peach crostata. And these days, I think beach is probably more appropriate only because I more often make it with nectarines than I do. I'm looking for the recipe. You'd think I would know this by heart after making it so many thousands of years. But it's in my book, Cooking in a Small Kitchen, but maybe not. Maybe it's in Soup Suppers. Soup Suppers, even though it's a soup cookbook, has a whole dessert chapter. And I believe it is in that book. And Jill, our friend Jill, is always telling me about things she's made from Soup Suppers, and they're not soup. Anyway, so I make it with nectarines because they're more reliable than peaches. It comes down to that. I don't have a lot of luck with peaches. I think that every time I get a good peach, it's like a revelation to me that a peach can taste like this. Because more often than not, they don't taste like what I imagine they should taste like. Let's put it that way. On the other hand, I find nectarines, which are, I believe, a cross between a plum and a peach originally. Now there are a lot of varieties of nectarines themselves. And I don't know. They're just more reliable. And also, you have to try to find, it's not totally absolutely necessary, but try to find freestone peaches or nectarines, whichever you decide to use in this recipe. So this, to me, is the season for a peach crostata or a nectarine crostata like this, except that you have to turn the oven on. So I don't suggest making it today or tomorrow. I don't know. I'm not turning my oven on. It's 97 degrees today. It's already up to 85 around here. I don't know. What's it up there?
It is 76.
Well, aren't you lucky? So very soon I will turn on all the air conditioning and all the fans. We still have window air conditioning in Brooklyn, and it'll be very comfortable. But and I'm still not turning the oven on. So, but this is for future use. Then by the weekend it should be a little better. And you're going to get great, this is it, this is the season for peaches and nectarines. Now, I made a mistake, so it's basically a cookie dough that you press into a pie plate, top with peach or nectarine halves. Now, if you don't get freestone, it's hard to get nice halves, So you may end up having to make it sliced, and you'll just have to slice it off the pit. But see if you can find freestone ones. And I like to peel them. You know, I don't peel a lot of vegetables or fruit these days, but for this recipe, I do like to peel them, which means just dunk them into boiling water for 1 minute and let them cool off a tiny bit, and the skins should slip right off. It's not hard at all. It does mean lighting the fire on the stove. So that's it. You make this cookie dough. You put the halved fruit on top. You can sprinkle it with a little cinnamon if that's your thing. Not my thing especially, but a good thing. And then then you sprinkle it with sugar. And when the peaches are half baked, so to speak, you pour on a mixture of cream and eggs. Basically, you're making a custard now, except that the fruit has given off a lot of syrup. Between being cooked and sugared, there will be syrup in the pan. So it's a real delicious custard in the end. And you put it back in the oven. So for the cookie dough, I use 2 cups of all-purpose flour. And you don't... I'm giggling to myself because I once made the mistake of adding too much sugar because the recipe the recipe is in Soup Suppers, which is still my best-selling cookbook, and it's a paperback. I think it's like $16-$17, something like that, on Amazon. Believe it or not, I got a royalty from this book recently, a big $60. So I'm not plugging it to make a lot of money, but it is a good book. I use it myself these days. Anyway, so there's only a quarter of a cup of sugar. However, the way the recipe is written, 1 cup of sugar, and then you have to get to the directions before it tells you you only want a quarter of a cup of that in the cookie dough. So one day, I don't know how I did this. This was when I'd already been making this recipe for years. Some company came to Cornwall, and I made this as a dessert. And not thinking even that I'd made any mistake, I go to cut the thing, and I have a lot of trouble getting through the bottom crust, the crostata part. I'd never had that before. And then it dawned on me. I never told my guests. They loved this. It was way too sweet for me. I'd forgotten that it was only a quarter of a cup of flour, and I'd put the entire cup of sugar in the dough. So if you want to make a nice, crisp, kind of shortbread dough, then that's what you should do. But don't do it here. So 2 cups of flour, a quarter of a cup of sugar, a half a teaspoon of salt, mix it all together, and then cut in a whole stick of butter. When I say cut in, you can use your pastry blender if you want. In the old days, I never had a pastry blender. I did it with my fingertips. So if you look at the cookbook, it'll say using the tips of your fingers until it's sort of coarse meal. You don't want to make every little dot of butter disappear, but it should be like meal. And then this mixture, you press into the bottom, as I said earlier, and up the sides of either a 9 or 10-inch pie plate. I use this very old Pyrex deep dish pie plate. I'm not sure if it's 9 or 10 inches, but it sort of doesn't matter. And bring the dough that you've made, press it to the top edge of the pie plate, and pressing the side of the dough with your left index finger into the side of your right index finger, you make you make a nice trim on the top of the dough so it's not a raw edge. And then arrange your peach halves. Now, depends on the size of the peaches, how many peach halves you're going to use. My recipe calls for 5 or 6 medium peaches. I think that would be 5 or 6 small peaches. So it depends on the peach. But fill the bottom neatly with peach halves, as many as you can fit in there, and sprinkle on the rest of the sugar, which in this case is 3/4 of a cup of sugar. And you can put the cinnamon on that at that point, too. Put it in a 400-degree oven for 15 minutes. Meanwhile, beat together with a fork or whisk the cream, a cup of cream, and 2 eggs. Now, I have, over the years, made this with cream, with yogurt. I've never made it with Greek yogurt, but with regular yogurt, with sour cream. It all works. So I would think even buttermilk, if you want something very low fat, I would think that even buttermilk might work. And, of course, it'll give it a much tartar flavor than if you use regular heavy cream. And then put, after 15 minutes, pour the cream and egg mixture over the top, the peaches or nectarines, and put it back in the oven for another 15 minutes, and, another half hour, 45 minutes altogether, 15 minutes to cook the peaches, and then another half hour for the custard. And, you know, I remember, even though it was a hot August that we were all in this house together, we often would eat this when it was still warm because nobody could resist it. But I think it's better cooled off and let the custard fully set and the juices settle in. And I would say, you know, let it cool at least a half an hour before you dig in. It's better not to refrigerate it. I found over the many years it usually disappears right away. But if you happen to have something left over in the pie plate, leave it in the pie plate and cover it with aluminum foil, not plastic, because you want a little breathing in there, and leave it at room temperature. And then you'll finish it the next day. That is the beach or peach or nectarine crostata. I once did it with blueberries, I remember, and I liked that too.
I love nectarines.
I love nectarines too, and you could mix nectarines and blueberries. That's a great. In fact, yesterday was my next door neighbor's birthday, and we couldn't have a party for obvious reasons. But her boyfriend brought her a chocolate mousse cake, and she made for him, because he doesn't eat chocolate mousse cake, an incredible fruit salad. And so she sent over some cake and salad so we could share for her birthday. And it was nectarines and blueberries. Very good combination. And the nectarines are actually today, because I have to get out of the house somehow, and it's going to be feeling over 100 degrees, I'm going to take my air-conditioned vehicle to air-conditioned Whole Foods, where my nephew reports the prices. He reported this last night. He said he went to Whole Foods and bought an enormous amount of produce because the prices were so low, and he wondered why could they be so low. And I don't know the real reason, but everything he mentioned, as I pointed out, was in season at this moment, at peak season, like zucchini, some berries that he bought. I don't know how much they were. They were, and he said, like $2 for $4, two quarts. So these are the things that I always say, you know, when something's at its peak, when the price gets low, and that's the case. I'm not sure where asparagus are at their peak right now in July, but they started out in my supermarket at like $10 a pound. When I was craving asparagus at the beginning of May, which is usually the beginning of the season. And now they were down to $4 a pound in the same supermarket. And by the way, better asparagus than they were. I never bought them at that price. But I think when they got down to $7, I bought some. And these for $4 were even, or $3 or $4 were even better. So, yeah, look for low prices on certain things, even though the price of food has gone way up. Depending on what you read, it's at the minimum, it's gone, the overall price of food in the supermarket has gone up 6 or 7%, but there are some products that have gone up as much as 25%. Meat in particular, I think. And I asked my butcher, and he was not really affected by any of the COVID outbreak closures and the meat packing plants, and that was supposed to make meat much more expensive. But meat in general, COVID or not, for whatever reason, and there are a lot of different factors in the price of meat, meat has gone up. Even poultry has gone up.
I've noticed it in poultry. I haven't noticed it in meat because I stay away from meat. And,
yeah.
I've been on a COVID-19 diet. I think this was a great time to lose weight, so I've lost 21 pounds during COVID-19.
Yeah, how?
I only eat three times a day. I eat once in the morning when I take my normal medication, and I have maybe 250, 300 calories. Then I have a big salad for lunch, somewhere around 1,000 calories. I put chickpeas, maybe some turkey or stuff
That's
like that.
That's a lot for a salad.
Well, if you put some turkey, you got to be honest with yourself, and you put dressing on it and stuff like that, it all comes up to, about 1,000. And then for dinner, I keep myself around 600 or 700 calories of something. And,
well, the reason you're losing weight is you're on a diet, Marshall.
Well, yeah.
Not because of the virus.
But it makes it a lot easier because I don't
go. I'm stuck at home. You're working every day, too.
That's all I do is I go to work and I go home. So I decided when I was home, I would regiment myself and just take those three
times.
Well,
good boy. What can I say?
Well, we'll see how it continues.
that's great, though. It doesn't sound like you feel you're being deprived either.
No, I'm not. I stopped.
So I don't think I've gained weight in the 4 months that I'm home. Is it 4 months? I think it is.
Yeah, actually closer to five.
Let's see. I haven't. In the beginning, I never left the house for 6 weeks maybe. And my last day out was March 17th or 18th. And so to April, May, June, July. Well, so it's 4 months for me. But I do go out now. You can walk around my neighborhood safely. Besides that, people are very conscious of social distancing. 99% of people wear masks. I don't understand the communities where they don't wear masks. I just don't get it.
It's shown in New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, and Massachusetts. We all had very high levels. People
right.
started social distancing and wearing masks. And guess what? That's the only thing we've done, and it's brought everything down. So the rest
right.
of the country is just plain stupid. They didn't learn.
Thank you. Yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah.
My niece lives in St. Louis, and I've been talking about masks to her all along here. Her husband has a delicatessen that has remained open throughout the throughout everything. And in fact, he's doing spectacularly well because people go to delicatessens for takeout food, and he has grocery items as well. So, but he doesn't wear. I mean, they haven't been wearing masks until last week.
Oh, I will.
And they go to work.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, but now they understand because, St. Louis and St. Louis County have a huge surge.
Well, they'll all learn sooner or later. I was really surprised about California. They had it down pat early, and then they let it slip.
Yeah, what happened? I never got what happened.
They opened up a little bit, and the young people who can carry this, and only about 1% of them get really sick. Young people started going out and congregating like they were allowed to, but still, and of course that spread it because the young people got it.
They're not allowed to,
yeah.
But several hundred young people looked like to me mostly with not masks, congregated in Astoria, Queens on the street where there were restaurants open that served alcohol. I mean, open on the street. We have that here. In Park Slope, they've closed a couple of streets. I'm not sure all week, but certainly on the weekend, so that the restaurants can spill out onto the street. And they can be outdoor dining. Who wants to sit in 95-degree heat eating outside? But that's another story. Anyway, the thing I wonder about and my neighbors wonder about is why weren't the cops there to break it up? Well, they were there to break it up, and the kids, even with the cops there trying to break it up, the kids wouldn't go home.
So
now the governor and the mayor are on the case in Astoria, and one thing, by executive order in New York, you cannot serve alcohol unless you sit at a table and also order food.
Well, we'll see what happens, but like, you know, the big effect up here, Arthur, has been people from Brooklyn and the Bronx
coming up
and overusing the parks and staying there all day, and so the parks have had to shut down because they were just doing things that were not normal. It's this whole pandemic has had a weird effect on Americans. Very weird.
Well, it's brought out the worst in a lot of people,
the
best in a lot of other people.
It has.
And, you know, you wonder why in Park Slope, 99, maybe even 99.5% of people wear masks. And in Borough Park, nobody wears a mask. And then, you know, let's move on to food.
Yeah. Food.
Because between, you know, COVID anxiety doesn't get to me as much nowadays as does Trump anxiety.
That's right. It's so true.
But no matter what, I'm anxious. And that has always made me eat.
Absolutely.
So I, in preparation for the heat wave, I don't know why I thought of this, I made a big, big pot of chili con carne. And I do know why. Because last week, catching up with things that I said I was going to talk about but I haven't talked about, you know, I rediscovered saltine crackers. And a big memory for me is my father crushing saltines over his chili, which he loved and my mother made frequently. And when I got to college and I wanted to make my mother's chili, I called her and said, "How do you do it?" And she said, "Look at the Fanny Farmer cookbook."
Fanny Farmer.
So, you know, I haven't even looked truthfully at my recipe in soup. I had to make more or less the chili of my childhood so that I could crush saltine crackers over it. And I'm looking at, it must be in here somewhere. Here it is, page 89. I wonder if I made it like this, what it says here. I probably did, pretty close. But I'll tell you what I did. More or less, maybe not. I sautéed an onion, a big onion, my biggest onion. The recipe in the book calls for two large onions, about 3 cups. I didn't have 3 cups. I had barely 2 cups. And 6 to 8 large cloves of garlic. I had that. I chopped it. 2 pounds of ground beef. I had that. That's exactly what I had. And I actually had lean, and it says 2 pounds lean ground beef. I don't like making this with my usual fatty beef because you only end up skimming it off the next day. And I don't know. It has a greasy feel that I don't like. So then this recipe in Soup Suppers calls for 2 28-ounce cans of plum tomatoes. I only used one. And then the seasoning is, of course, salt. Here it says 2 teaspoons, of course, sea salt. I do use sea salt, and I probably did have about 2 teaspoons. 3 tablespoons of chili powder. So this is an issue with me because I have been for years making my own chili powder using dried chilies that I grind up. However, I have from time to time spotted some interesting-looking chili powder, pure chili, in the supermarket or whatever market, and I bought that. But the other day when I decided to do this, all I could get was McCormick. And your usual chili powder has mixed into it some oregano and some cumin. Some of them even have salt and a little starch. I think the starch is more for pourability. But anyway, I compromised and I bought a little thing of McCormick, ordinary McCormick, not even a special McCormick. of a chili powder. And I use about a quarter of a cup of that for my 2 pounds of meat. In my cookbook, it calls for 3 tablespoons. I bet you I was using 3 generous tablespoons, which would be a quarter of a cup. And then I added my own oregano, about a teaspoon of dried oregano, and my own cumin. I used a half a teaspoon of ground cumin. Well, I must really know this recipe. Oh, but, I see. I did not use 2 cans of kidney beans because after I drained them, not rinsed, but just drained them, and put them in with the meat, it looked like enough to me. So there you go. But you could stretch this easily by using more tomatoes and more kidney beans.
You know, when I make chili because of you, you told Jill where to buy the beans, and so every year she gets me beans from this rancho.
Yes, good beans.
But she also gets me, they've got their own Mexican oregano, and their own and they sent me some of their, and they send their chili powder. I want to tell you, you better like your chili hot because.
All right, so this was not terribly hot.
Yeah,
it definitely tasted like chili. But Bob was happy with it because he doesn't like hot. I heated my portion up myself. I used Tabasco, but I have other heat sources I might try. And anyway, I made so much that we had it yesterday with the crushed saltines on top and a spoonful of sour cream as well. But I have enough that today I'm going to make it again, or maybe I'll wait till tomorrow, we'll see. And Bob has been craving spaghetti with chili.
There you go.
So there you go. And I actually have, which I rarely do, I actually have some American cheese in the refrigerator. And I thought, spaghetti with chili, American cheese, and chopped onion. This, we're talking now Cincinnati chili, isn't it?
Cincinnati.
They and they put, my theory, I'm sure that this is more than a theory, but I'm going to say it's my theory, that it's because there's a substantial Greek population in Cincinnati, and the Greeks put cinnamon in their meat sauce, like, for instance, for pasticho or for moussaka. There's always some cinnamon, maybe nutmeg or allspice as well, those warm spices. And I like that idea, by the way. So who knows? Maybe I'll even put a little cinnamon in it when I put it on the spaghetti. Although Bob will be distracted by the cinnamon, for sure. And the other thing is, you can make sloppy joes with this. I mean, you only need is some kind of bun or bread. I like it toasted, and then just pour it on top.
You know, some people like barbecue chili. No, I don't like barbecue chili, but I think chili with spaghetti really works well.
And, oh, yeah, it does.
And it's filling. You don't. It's not a big bowl that you get. It's very, very filling.
Well, I'm going to, for this, I would only make 2 ounces, literally, 2 ounces of spaghetti. I weigh everything. And our normal portion is 3 ounces. But this is going to be more chili than spaghetti. Anyway, my nephew said, how could you eat chili in this weather? I said, the house is air conditioned.
Yeah, sort of right, that's right, exactly right.
And, you know, the one reason I did do it, besides that I wanted to have chili with saltines, is that it only takes one burner. It's a one-pot meal.
All right, well, I want you to enjoy the chili with spaghetti and let me know
I'm going to enjoy Whole Foods.
Okay.
I'm going to come back with some good cold cuts, which they always have, and make a sandwich.
All right, Arthur, I'll speak to you next week.
Take care.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. And on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.